examining her hand in minutest detail. Eventually, he sat back, removed the glass, and stared at her. "You're dead," he said. Kaylee waited. She couldn't think of any suitable reply. "I'm not" lacked a certain style, while "Is it serious?" seemed somehow too frivolous.
"Did I say I thought this was going to be serious?" said Cutwell.
"I think you did," said Kaylee carefully, keeping her tone totally level.
"I was right."
"Oh,
it could be fatal."
"How much more fatal," said Kaylee, "than being dead?"
"I didn't mean for you."
"Oh,
something very fundamental seems to have gone wrong, you see. You're dead in every sense, but the, actual. I mean, the cards think you're dead. Your lifeline thinks you're dead. Everything and everyone thinks you're dead."
"I don't," said Kaylee, but her voice was less than confident.
"I'm afraid your opinion doesn't count."
"But people can see and hear me."
"The first thing you learn when you enroll at Unseen University, I'm afraid, is that people don't pay much attention to that sort of thing. It's what the minds tell them that's important."
"You mean people don't see me because their minds tell them not to?"
"Afraid so. It's called predestination or something."
Cutwell looked at her wretchedly.
"I'm a wizard. We know about these things." "Actually, it's not the first thing you learn when you enroll," he added. "I mean, you learn where the lavatories are and all that sort of thing before that. But after that, it's the first thing."
"You can see me, though."
"Ah, well, wizards are specially trained to see things that are there and not to see things that aren't. You get these special exercises."
Kaylee drummed her fingers on the table, or tried to. It turned out to be difficult. She stared down in vague horror. Cutwell hurried forward and wiped the table with his sleeve.
"Sorry," he muttered. "I had treacle sandwiches for supper last night."
"What can I do?"
"Nothing."
"Nothing?
Well, you could certainly become a very successful burglar." "Sorry, that was tasteless of me."
"I thought so." Cutwell patted her ineptly on the hand, and Kaylee was too preoccupied even to notice such flagrant lèse-majesté.
"You see, everything's fixed. History's all worked out from start to finish. What the facts actually are is beside the point. History just rolls straight over the top of them. You can't change anything because the changes are already part of it. You're dead. It's fated. You'll just have to accept it."
He gave an apologetic grin.
"You're a lot luckier than most dead people, if you look at it objectively," he said. "You're alive to enjoy it."
"I don't want to accept it. Why should I accept it? It's not my fault."
"You don't understand. History is moving on. You can't get involved in it anymore. There isn't a part in it for you, don't you see? Best to let things take their course."
He patted her hand again. She looked at him. He withdrew his hand.
"What am I supposed to do then?" she said. "Not eat because the food wasn't destined to be eaten by me? Go and live in a crypt somewhere?"
"Bit of a poser, isn't it?" agreed Cutwell. "That's fate for you, I'm afraid. If the world can't sense you, you don't exist. I'm a wizard, we know."
"Don't say it."
Kaylee stood up. 5 generations ago, one of her ancestors had halted his band of nomadic cutthroats a few miles from the mound of Stolat, and had regarded the sleeping city with a peculiarly determined expression that said, "This'll do. Just because you're born in the saddle doesn't mean you have to die in the bloody thing." Strangely enough, many of his distinctive features had, by a trick of heredity, been bequeathed to his descendant, accounting for her rather idiosyncratic attractiveness. Although not the droopy moustache and round furry hat with the spike on it. They were never more apparent than now. Even Cutwell was impressed. When it came to determination, you could have cracked rocks on her jaw. In exactly the same tone of voice that her ancestor had used when he addressed his weary, sweaty followers before the attack, she said, "No, no, I'm not going to accept it. I'm not going to dwindle into some sort of ghost. You're going to help me, wizard." The speech has been passed on to later generations in an epic poem commissioned by his son, who wasn't born in a saddle and could eat with a knife and fork. It began, "See yonder the stolid foeman slumber, fat with stolen gold, corrupt of mind. Let the spears of your wrath be as the steppe fire on a windy day and in dry season. Let your honest blade thrust like the horns of a 5-year-old yok with severe toothache." And went on for 3 hours. Reality, which can't usually afford to pay poets, records that, in fact, the entire speech ran, "Lads, most of them are still in bed.